Hey guys, Deidre Shen here on the Growth Boss podcast. And today's episode, I'm so excited about this because we have a special guest, Christy Suma, who is going to talk to us about how she was able to grow her business to a seven-figure business. Yes, she's going to spill all of those details for you. So hang in there and we will be right back after this intro.
The big question is this. How does an everyday person like you, like me, start their own e-commerce business and take it from zero to 100K quickly? By the way, without feeling salesy or slimy or wasting a buttload of money on paid marketing. That is the question, and this podcast will help answer it. Feel great, gave up all the struggles. We are Deidre Shen and Bonna Rai, and this is the Growth Boss podcast.
We've got a special guest for a virtual huddle.
Oh, yay!
Well, we do. We have Christy here. Christy, what did you think of Bonna's, I don't know what to call it.
Well, Christy's like, I don't know what's going on here.
just not for the audience.
And she's bringing lots of energy today, which I can appreciate. It's the afternoon here, so I'm definitely feeding off of her energy and trying not to have another coffee right now. So I appreciate it a lot, Donna.
You are just too lovely.
Yes, that's right. It's definitely the nicest thing anyone out of the two of you have said.
Awesome. Well, I'm so excited to have you here because you have a phenomenal brand, Encircled. And can you tell us a little bit about it? How did it start? Yeah, and where it's at kind of now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I started Encircled in late 2012. I was originally a strategy management consultant, basically living out of my carry-on suitcase because I was traveling from client to client, flying pretty much every single week doing consulting, as you did pre-pandemic world for consulting. And I got really inspired about the idea of traveling light, but doing it stylishly and also not sacrificing comfort at the same time. Because when you are traveling a lot, you're sitting or you're running from gate to gate in the airport, and you want to carry on a little bag and you want to look good. And, you know, I had all these colleagues, male colleagues specifically, who could bring one dress shirt and, four different ties, and they were able to make all these different outfits. But for women, there's a lot of pressure to always look different. So I got really inspired by the idea of having versatile multi-way clothing that was really easy to dress up and dress down and transition so that you could pack less and do more with less. So I basically started with one item that I designed called the Chrysalis Cardi, which is an 8-in-1 scarf, cardigan, dress, tunic piece. Kind of the take on that universal circle scarf, but we did it in a really cool way where it has hidden snaps. So you can snap it together and it looks like what it is versus a scarf tied into a dress. And not having any fashion background, fumbled my way through manufacturing that product and launched just one SKU and two colors. And today we are a multi-million dollar business and we have 16 employees. And we have, I think, close to 40 products now across, and the Chrysalis Cardi is still part of our collection, but some of our best sellers include the dressy sweatpants, the comfy dress shirt, the dressy leggings. So we've really played into that comfort meets style and also sustainability. So everything's made in Toronto as well. We're a certified B Corp.
That's amazing. Wow. I think we could have used that in our trip last week.
Where did you guys go?
Sorry?
Where did you guys go?
We're in Florida. And I did not have even carry-on baggage. We're not even talking checked. Forget checked baggage. Right. We don't do checked baggage. Yeah. I did not even have carry-ons. I was like, how am I going to fit everything I need for a multi-day conference? And this would have been a perfect solution. Take us back, Christy, to sort of that, you mentioned that not having a background in fashion, that you're kind of muddling your way through manufacturers and things like that. Now, I don't really want to talk about the operational side. I more want to talk about how did you actually launch this thing? How did you find your audience? Was it a case of, you just leveraged your colleagues and friends and people you knew, and then they told other people, or did you find them in some specific way? That's kind of what I'm really curious about. How did you get started from literally day zero?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So previous to management consulting, I was in consumer packaged goods marketing. So I had a lot of marketing experience and brand management, but not on small budgets. So I was used to, you know, running $10 million marketing budgets where you have lots of money to spare. So I had to get a little bit creative. So it kind of started a different way. So originally, all I knew how to do, quite honestly, was hire PR. So I hired a PR firm right out of the gate because I thought the product had a lot of uniqueness and would be very something that people would want to write about because it was very different and had a neat kind of problem solution story to it. And that was really the first initial steps to getting us traction. However, the problem with PR is you always need to be feeding it new news. And when you have one product, you don't really have a ton of new news. And I was small, kind of working. It was just me. So there wasn't a lot going on. So, and I was also still working full time. So I didn't really want to be part of the story necessarily in the news as well. So it kind of limited the ability of PR. So we had this like big launch and for sure, like friends and family were like my first sales. Absolutely. You should definitely reach out to your network and build that way. But ultimately, what really changed the game for me was I took a course back in March 2013 called B School by Marie Forleo, and it taught me a lot about content marketing. So I was able to really double down on that idea pretty early on using value-based content to drive traffic and sales to our website. So a lot of blog posts on, you know, packing guide for Portugal and Pinterest pins to go with it and newsletters to tag onto it. And really being so focused in that niche of travel, especially at that time, was really helpful for the brand. And it just kind of caught fire from there.
Wow. That's incredible. Can you describe, like, do you even remember, was there a particular moment when you were like, wow, this is actually a legit business? Like, can you describe that moment for us?
Yeah, I remember it actually pretty well because I was a consultant still and I was in New York at a client's site and my phone started exploding. And I was like, it was like December, I think it was December 2013. And my phone started blowing up and I was like, why is my phone blowing up? And I look, and at the time, Shopify used to send these like order things. I've turned them off now, but I know a lot of Shopify entrepreneurs leave them on where they're like, cha-ching, every time you get an order. So it was like, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And I was like, oh my God, is my website been hacked? Like that was my first thought was, whoa, somebody's hacked my website. And then I looked and I was like, no, these are like legit orders. And what had happened was through a PR person I knew and who pitched us like maybe 8 months prior, we had gotten into the Globe and Mail, which is a big national newspaper in Canada, into their gift guide. And it was like the most hideous photo, but people loved the product idea. And we had the most sales. I think we did more sales in that like 2-day span than probably all year. So I was like, whoa, okay. So, you know, I knew the product was cool because I'd done so much like prototyping and testing around it. And I knew it was unique, but that was like a bit of validation to say, like, if you get the brand awareness around it, that people will really gravitate towards the concept. So, you know, the following year, like probably by the end of next year, I'd quit my corporate job basically.
And what would you say? Because I guess 2013, you know, that's quite a while ago now. Obviously, I think since then or around that time, kind of minimalism, especially water minimalism, really started to take off. So what would you say probably, you know, because you've been competitive for so long, what would you say was probably like the main thing that kind of kept you still as the, you know, the business of choice for your customers?
I would say a couple of things. So I think having really good quality products and really great customer service has kept us, I think, at the top of our game and being really strong with retention of customers, not just through marketing, but also through those two things I mentioned. We generally run with a very low return rate. There is a return rate, of course, but like, you know, in e-commerce, that can be anywhere from like 20 to 30%. 40% if you're in categories like shoes or something like that, or denim where it's harder to fit. And we run around 10%. So we try and do everything we can to like get people the right size, the right fit to avoid that kind of returns. And then also like our quality rating is really high. So our customer service rating consistently is like close to 5 stars, even on people who aren't satisfied with their order, they're at least satisfied with the way that we handled it. And that results in higher repeat customers. So that kind of passes anything. And if you have a good quality product, I believe that that leaves its own message with people. So when you do launch new products, they know that you stand behind your quality. And that helps you grow as well versus these like fly by night operations that kind of come in, you know, like I've had my product copied, various versions of different products we've had copied by brands and they make up a website and it's like, whatever, you see it and you're like, okay, you get frustrated, but I also know that they can't do it the way that you do it, you know? So I think those kind of like quality metrics are something that's undervalued in e-commerce.
Yeah, amazing. And so since then, so, you know, you started with content marketing, and what have you been leveraging? And not now, because I want to ask a different question about now, but like mm-hmm. in that span from 2013 to mm-hmm. what other kind of strategies were you using to drive traffic essentially to your website?
Yeah, we did a lot of list building. So my email list was something that I focused on really early on. So getting email subscribers through creating not just like discount-based opt-ins, but value-based opt-ins. So originally we had like a free printable travel packing list for carry-on travel. Then we created this like 22-page minimalist wardrobe workbook, which you could like print out and run through and basically streamline your whole wardrobe. And now we have a capsule wardrobe quiz to help people find the right wardrobe for their lifestyle. So we've really always focused, again, on that value-added benefits. That's been really key to building the list and then using all the social channels to kind of promote it as well. But again, leading with that value and making sure it's something that's like an equivalent value exchange for the customer or subscriber. We were fairly early into influencer marketing as well. So like, you know, we started doing that in like 2013, 2014, 2015, when it really was like, you know, direct sales results from working with bloggers and stuff like that. And now it's definitely a very different space and very fragmented, I would say, in a lot of ways. But we would have like very specific travel influencers that we would work with who would just do a post about our product and we get like $10,000 in sales. So, you know, the funny thing with digital marketing is you have to constantly be evolving your tactics and how you approach things, because channels just, you know, naturally ebb and flow and sometimes become better or worse over time, mm-hmm. as we've seen in the last year with Facebook ads for sure. But, you know, I've always stood behind the principles of like email marketing pretty strongly, actually. So much so that I have a course in my coaching business about it, because I do think it's something that stands the test of time. And having that one-to-one connection with a customer is really priceless.
Yeah, for sure. And I actually, as I'm kind of almost piecing your journey from a marketing perspective, I was like, oh my gosh, this is pretty much the exact journey that I went on. And we had a hospitality business mm-hmm. back in Sydney, and it was literally, you know, content marketing, build a list, leverage influencers, like it's literally the same strategy time and time again that, you know, people use. So it works, right? Mm-hmm. And so now I want to talk about now. So obviously you've gone through that process of growth, and now you're scaling. And so the strategies are going to be different because mm-hmm. you have more to spend, things like that. So talk us through what you're looking to do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we still do a lot of content marketing for sure. It's still something that shows up. Like probably every month we're doing a pretty extensive blog post for both SEO and like promotional purposes for social media and stuff like that. But you know, paid ads are a very big portion of our business now, for sure. That's been increasing since probably we started doing paid ads maybe 2017. And obviously this year with iOS 14 and iOS 15 now kind of disrupting email, it's been a bit challenging for sure. But I still do think there's a lot, you know, every time I ran into a customer the other day in my neighborhood Starbucks, which is just so random. She like, I spotted her and I was like, I think that's my clothing, but I didn't want to ask her. And then she recognized me, I guess, because I was staring at her. And I asked her how she heard about me. And she was like, oh, it was an Instagram ad. And I was like, interesting. And this is a customer who's placed like 25 orders with us over the last couple of years. So you can still get really great lifetime value and really connected customers through that. So I'm still big on that channel. Although I think it's important, we've started to test new channels to diversify our traffic as well. And we really want to double down on Instagram this year and start to really use that as our content platform. So moving away from the blog a little bit and creating that more dynamic short form content that people are really craving right now. You know, the attention span is shrinking. So, which is easy because we can create lots of content that's 7 to 10 seconds long, but it's just a different platform. So we really want to test that and see where that takes us as well.
That's exciting because I think, I think definitely I would say probably in your space, blogging would have been, you know, kind of like super helpful because I guess it really kind of gets you to, you know, talk to not just the product itself, but contextualize it and share tips and things like that. I think there's definitely been a dip in long form content, still works when people are Googling certain things, but I think, yeah, like things like Reels, YouTube Shorts, and all that short form, you know, punchy things where you can kind of communicate a very conceptual thing visually.
Yeah.
I think definitely is the way to go. So we'll have to follow you on Instagram. So I'm just looking you up to
see what you say. Follow us on Instagram at encircled underscore.
There you go. You got the plug. Yep. You heard it, you guys. And now is there anything, actually, I'll come back to this question. Let me first ask, now that you've already mentioned that you want to be doubling down on Instagram, is there anything else that you're looking to do sort of from now going forward? What are the main marketing strategies that you're going to be looking to use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're definitely looking at, I've been on TikTok since 2018, I guess, but we haven't really used it much as a brand. I do think that's an interesting channel to me. It's a bit younger than our core demographic, but we're still kind of testing that to see what that looks like. And as TikTok becomes more trackable, you know, they've launched like an ads platform and stuff like that. So we're definitely watching that channel. And I would say we're looking towards how we can reach a bit more of a mass audience through influencers, but through a different kind of influencer, I would say, mm-hmm. Which maybe isn't more of, it isn't necessarily the biggest like sales driver, but it's a brand awareness driver. Cause like, again, like I mentioned, we have like really strong metrics across the business, but we've really need to grow our reach to extend our impact, you know, and there's a lot of brands out there. And so we're just trying to play around and see how we can link in with the right people who really love our brand and want to share that with their audiences and stuff like that. And not just like micro influencers, because we've done a ton of that, but like pretty big influencers that we're trying to get partnerships with on a more formal basis. And whether that involves even product development in the future, it might. So that's kind of what we're thinking about.
To pay them for it? Is that kind of formal partnership that you're looking? Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. And is there something that you wish you had either done sooner or that you had told yourself, like in your journey,
mm-hmm.
in business, like what is the one thing that, you know, you wish you had known or done?
Mm-hmm. I probably would have hired somebody sooner, to be honest. So, and it was a little different. It was a little different back then. So like before I quit my full-time job, I was working from home, so I didn't have a workspace or anything like that. Back then, it wasn't like it is now to work from home. It was like a little bit more weird to like have somebody in your home office that works with you. Like it's just now things are totally topsy-turvy, but I would have hired somebody sooner because I think I had a lot of fear initially about hiring somebody and being able to afford to pay them. But I spent a lot of time early on in the business doing things that were not you know, income producing activities for the business, just because I was like, well, I'm the only one who can do it. Like I get into that mindset. I'm a bit of a perfectionist. Now, of course I have a team, but, you know, I could have probably grown a bit faster if I had more help early on or virtual help or something like that. Because, you know, there's so many things to do operationally as an e-commerce business owner, you can get really bogged down on them. And if you're not somebody who really gravitates naturally towards sales or marketing, you know, it's very easy to slip into the comfort zone and get involved in like the back end of the business, which I think is important. But if you really want to grow your impact and reach, you need to be involved in sales for sure.
Definitely. Would you, who would you have hired if you hadn't had your time again? Who would have been your first hire?
Oh my God. Well, my first hire was somebody to help with customer service, and I would have brought them on sooner because like I am the worst at customer service.
I'm the worst.
I mean, I'm too emotionally attached to the product. I'm really bad with sentence structure. So like anything I say comes off really, like we had a customer the other day who Instagram DM'd us, and I sometimes check the DM, so I responded, but I don't realize sometimes what I respond. I'm so short and brief. Like I need to be like, thank you for your message. Like I'm just like, okay, received. Like, you know, I'm very like pedantic with it. So I'm not the best person for that. So I would have hired that for sure. Cause I used to get really upset when people were like, I need to return the product. I'd be like, oh no. And I'd like cry. So I think that's definitely functionally like that shipping and, you know, maybe even looking at it in early on, especially when I had one product. I mean, outsourcing shipping would have been like a no-brainer. You know, when you get more products, it gets much more complex. But with like one SKU, for sure, that should have been out of house versus paying my friends with pizza to help me pack orders type of thing.
And where do you see yourself investing for growth over the next year, say, over the next 12 months? Where is the one main area that you're going to be really looking to invest in?
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched on a couple of them already. Definitely like video content, short form content for sure, both for paid and organic social. And that may involve influencers as well. And then another area where we're looking to invest, well, two, one is retail. So we, previous to the pandemic, we're doing a lot of pop-up shops and we had our own retail space in our studio, which has been shut down for 2 years now. And we really miss those in-person events and markets that we used to do because, you know, I know when people touch our fabric, they're like basically sold, because it feels amazing. So, and it's hard to replicate that experience online, to be honest. So retail's always been part of the blueprint for the future for Encircled. Like owning our own retail stores is something that was also like in the works before the pandemic. Thankfully, no lease is signed, but it's something we're thinking about how to approach differently in the next year. And then we're also looking at doing, when we move next year, potentially our own kind of short run production in our studio in a larger space so that we can kind of fill that gap of short run products when we need like samples for influencers or to speed up the product development process. We're finding that to be a bit of a gap. So we're looking at developing that in-house as well.
Wow, that is so cool. So many exciting things. This has been so super helpful for everyone listening to this. And I've loved, you know, almost going like breaking down your journey and what kind of marketing strategies have worked for you. And if anyone's interested in seeing what you offer, where's the place, best place to get for them to go?
Yeah. So as I shamelessly plugged earlier, you can follow us on Instagram. We're at Encircled. That's E-N-C-I-R-C-L-E-D _. And then we're also at encircled.co online.
Awesome. There you guys. There you go, you guys. I will put that in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Christy. This was such an awesome chat and we will speak to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us today and listening to this episode. Look, as a business owner myself, I'm well aware of the many, many other shows that you could have listened to. Hopefully, what we shared with you today will not only resonate with you, but will also help you on your own e-commerce journey. Now, if this episode did help you today, then be sure to share it with someone else you know who might need it. Hit subscribe and leave us a review. We gonna celebrate life, turning up tonight.